You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Jeff and Eric noticed one day that nobody on the internet talked about movies, so they had to find a way. They'll podcast thoughts on new movies they've discovered through autumn, winter, spring, and summer on Fridays. And when you run out of films you love to view, tune into jokes, playing games, all this and more you'll find contained on TBS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I'm your host, Jeff Bear. Here's my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this show. It's the only movie podcast on the internet, so we're glad you found us. I'm Eric D. Snyder. This is Jeff Bear. Welcome to the show, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. By the way, episode number 360. 360, we've done a full revolution of degrees.
Nice. We're back to where we started?
Mm-hmm. If on episode one, if we turn one degree each time, we've now made a full revolution.
I know how degrees work.
Yeah. Well, all right.
How are you? Welcome back.
Oh, thanks. I had a fine time in Utah seeing friends and family. I saw enough of family. I saw all the family that I have there, is what I mean. But not enough of the friends.
How many friends did you see?
I saw, let me see, are we counting my friends' kids?
No!
As friends? Okay, well, all right. Then, I mean, two, four,
do six. You and Dylan hang out yet? Just the two of you?
No.
Okay, then he's not your friend.
Is that how we're defining friends, is you hang out just the two of you?
I think so.
Well, because, I mean, my friends...
Those are acquaintances. Those others are acquaintances.
One pair of friends have some children who are older teenagers who I have their numbers. We text sometimes. I think I have to consider those people friends.
That's tough.
If we're texting,
yeah.
You know?
If you're texting, I guess you might be considered friends.
And we would hang out. It wouldn't be weird for me to say, hey, 17-year-old Garen, want to go to the movies with me? It wouldn't be weird. I mean, it would be weird, but no weirder than anything else I do.
Keep telling yourself that. Keep telling yourself that over and over again in the mirror. It wouldn't be weird. It wouldn't.
It's more that I need to keep telling his parents that it wouldn't be weird.
There it is.
Me, I've convinced. But I had a nice trip in Utah, and it's a nice problem to have of having too many people that you want to see in not enough time. It's a nice problem to have.
Thank you, Grandma Snyder.
It's better than the opposite problem of having lots of time and nobody who wants to see you.
That's true.
I know you know it's true. But now I'm glad to be back. And welcome to the show, everyone. And let's talk about some movies. Wonder Woman.
A woman full of wonder.
Mm-hmm.
She is Wonder Woman.
And she's a superhero from the DC superheroes. And Wonder Woman's been around almost as long as Superman, I think. But there hasn't been a movie until now. For no particular reason. I mean, sexism. But apart from that.
I think that's the only, yeah.
They've certainly tried several times. And it just never quite got anywhere. But now, finally, Wonder Woman. And even better, it's pretty good.
Yes, it is.
It's connected to... We saw Wonder Woman in Batman v Superman.
That is correct.
Gal Gadot.
My goodness, this woman. What a lovely human being she is.
She is quite striking. And I don't even generally prefer her gender. She's quite lovely.
Right. She is quite lovely, and I like how everybody just notices how lovely she is in the movie. Like, everybody's taken aback by her.
Yeah, it's part of, I guess is part of the character, part of the lore.
She's a properly sized Angelina Jolie.
Is Angelina Jolie too tall?
No. I think she's too thin.
Oh, proportioned.
Yes, she's
I don't think we're allowed to say that people are too thin anymore.
Oh, that's not right?
No, I don't think we're allowed to say that.
Well, Angelina Jolie's like cheeks are getting sucked in too much, or something.
I'm just saying. I don't think we're allowed to say that, even if you're right. Gal Gadot, though, she looks well fed. She's great. She's great.
What? And, no, that's not a compliment.
It begins, we saw her in the Batman v Superman, and we saw Batman find the picture of her from World War I times. And so that is the framing reference here for this story, which takes us back.
And with that picture, the big question is, wait a minute, how did Chris Pine not age all those years? Because we know him as an actor that's like real in present day, so how in the world?
It turns out he was merely playing a character.
Right.
Who lived.
Called Steve Trevor.
In World War I times. And we're on the island of whatever, something.
Amazon women.
It's all women, and they were the offspring of the gods. The Greek gods are involved here. And young Diana wants to be a warrior, but her queen mother, her mother, the queen, Connie Nielsen, doesn't want her to be a warrior because she's special.
Thank goodness for Robin Wright. And how many times do I say that?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
When she's not even in the movie sometimes.
That's true.
She plays Diana's aunt, General Antiope. And she's all, like, very pro-war. Let's train Diana.
Yeah. And just to be prepared. She's not like, hey, let's kill everything.
Sure. And then wouldn't you know it, this island is protected from the world by a bubble, so no one can find it. But then some people find it by accident. Wouldn't you know it, World War I stumbles in.
The Great War, if you will.
It wasn't that great.
You've seen better?
I guess at the time. For the time, yeah. Yes. For the time, it's, you kind of have to judge.
Before the sequel, it was pretty great.
Sure.
Anyway, yeah, so Chris Pine,
he shows up.
He's Steve. He's a spy. Diana sees some good in him, so wants to protect him.
He's also, incidentally, the first man that Diana has ever laid eyes upon. Well, yeah. I gathered any of the women on the island have seen before.
It seemed like maybe in books and whatnot, it was men were available to be looked upon.
They're very well educated. They certainly know all about the world, even if they have not encountered, you know, men.
Right. It's the hands-on experience that they were missing with the men.
By the way,
and others.
With Smurfs: The Lost Village, this makes two movies this year in which a race of women sees men for the first time.
Okay, that's good. My first wow moment. And there was a couple of them, and that's almost how I think I judge superhero movies. Do I get bored? Do I get annoyed? And are there wow moments? And I didn't get bored. I didn't get annoyed. And there was a few wow moments in this one. The first one is with her we don't call them wristbands, do we?
Bracelets, I guess.
The bracelets, that's the official name? All right. I like these bracelets. They're cool. And something happens early on where I'm just like, I'm hooked there. She does some castle climbing from the outside. That's pretty cool as well. Mm-hmm. And she is just like, okay, Steve, I'm with you. I need to stop this war. Let's go. Take me with you.
Right. So she winds up in the real world fighting the war. And I like that she discovers her powers sort of gradually, and we discover what they are gradually. I agree with you on the wow moments, and I think those work because there aren't really any wasted scenes in the movie. Every scene serves a purpose. Mm-hmm. And I notice, for example, first we see little Diana, then there's like a teenage Diana, and then we see the grown-up Diana. The first scene where we see the full grown-up Gal Gadot Diana is also the first scene where she experiences her powers. So they're not wasting time.
Right.
It's in that scene, and she's fighting and play fighting or practice fighting. Anyways, and it's economical in that way, which is a problem that some of these movies, not just the DCs but the Marvels, sometimes have with these superhero movies, where there's just sort of lots of scenes, just lots of scenes of stuff happening.
So to establish a power without moving the plot forward, right. or whatever the case may be.
This one is a lot more economical in that way.
You guys will never guess what happens. Steve, Chris Pine's character, he can't convince the British government to do everything that he says. Oh, the villains in this movie, a woman who loves her poisons and apparently has had a little of it get on her skin. And then Danny Houston, who plays a guy who's in charge of things and occasionally snorts something to make himself stronger.
As one does.
So Steve needs to figure out a way if the government's not going to help him. So he enters a bar to get a ragtag group of soldiers with him.
As one does.
But it didn't feel stale. It just felt like standard. And that's there was occasional times where Wonder Woman is doing whoever you want to point to. Wow, she's using that shield a lot like Captain America does or whatever. But it doesn't feel...
Hey, Captain America's using that shield like Wonder Woman does.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did it first in this visual, recent adaptation of Superman, whatever, superhero movies. It doesn't matter. I'm just saying, even when it feels familiar, it doesn't feel bad in this case.
No.
And that has a lot to do with the charisma of not only Gal Gadot, but Chris Pine is given a lot to do here, and it's really fun. And occasionally, I'm almost annoyed that, like, he might be the more interesting character between the two.
Really?
On paper, like, what she's doing is, she's like, hey, let's end war, and I need to understand this world better.
Yeah.
That's what she's doing.
Yeah.
He's willing to sacrifice himself. He's meeting this amazing woman. Like, we're seeing her through his eyes.
Right.
As opposed to her just being, like, totally front and center, come with me, boys.
I just don't think he's a particularly interesting character. I mean, he's fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think she's really interesting.
I think she, as a presence, is amazing.
Themyscira. That's the island to live on.
Okay. Good.
Anyway, yeah, good times. It fits in the superhero genre, but it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't feel like just a retread of it, even though it does some of the tropes. But there's lots of tropes that it doesn't do. She's a different enough character from the others because she doesn't get superpowers. She doesn't create her own superpowers. So there's not that part of her origin story. She's sort of natural abilities. And so she doesn't have all the usual things of like establishing a villain, like an old nemesis. Just it's different. It's different enough from the usual.
She doesn't have tons of parent issues,
right? Doesn't have so much of that.
That's nice too.
None of the bumbling around in my secret identity. Not much of that stuff.
Not much. Although
she's making no effort to disguise herself. Like
right.
Chris Pine wants her to, but she's making no effort.
Yeah, the movie attempts to give her a pretty woman moment, which I think it overall works. I think it works. The main, you would say, the comedy comes from Chris Pine for the most part, right? Whether it's his reaction or whatever.
Right.
Another wow moment when she finally gets to the front line. Mm-hmm. It's pretty fantastic stuff there. Like, it gets your juices flowing. It's awe-inspiring.
Fittingly set in no man's land there in the World War I.
No man's land, you say?
They didn't say it, though. Here's the thing. Here's a good example of why this is a good movie. They're in the trenches there at the front, and Chris Pine says, "You can't go out there. It's no man's land. No man can go out there." And you know, I nudged Jeff in the ribs, because what did we just? Oh, Pirates of the Caribbean has a moment like that. No mm-hmm. man can do this. Oh, well, maybe a woman can, but they don't say it.
They don't say
she
it.
Doesn't
they
say
stop.
She doesn't say. Right. Oh, then maybe a woman can. She just does it, and so it's implied, and it's a bit of restraint that is not often seen in the DC comic book movies, which tend to be very unrestrained.
As far as all of her powers go, I have to say the truth lasso.
Love the truth rope.
It's good when it's used for jokes. Not so compelling or interesting for me when it's used seriously.
I don't understand how the bracelets work. I like that they deflect bullets, but I feel like that must be a combination of powers because she's able to, first of all, predict a bullet being fired at her and then also aim the bracelet to deflect it. And that's an amazing power or a combination of powers.
You know what's kind of nice?
Huh?
Her powers aren't very defined.
No. They're not.
Like, they didn't do the, you know, training montage to, like, spell out everything that she can do and why she can do it.
Right.
And I kind of, when the movie was over, I kind of liked that. But
she's,
yes.
She's still discovering it for herself.
Right. But the bracelets are interesting. She might be able to hover and not fly. I'm not sure.
She can kind of jump high and far, I think.
But it's not like a video game double jump or anything. I don't know.
It's
about
super strength and, of yep. course, the healing, fast healing. She gets cut or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
She has beautiful penmanship is another one. Lovely handwriting.
The basic
yeah.
power.
Yeah.
You know.
Patty Jenkins directed this. Patty Jenkins, famous, of course, for having directed the film Monster back in 2003, which was like 14 years ago.
Charlize Theron?
Yeah, that one.
Huh.
Yeah, that's the last movie Patty Jenkins directed. And she's
good for you, Patty Jenkins, because you did a heck of a job here.
And this has sort of been what people are talking about. Monster was nominated for several Academy Awards, and Charlize Theron won an Academy Award, and it takes 14 years for Patty Jenkins to get another movie?
Yeah.
that is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Meanwhile, Guy Ritchie keeps farting out one turd after another and keeps getting to make movies.
Hey, he's making good movies.
I know, but they're not making movies.
Don't you dare.
Whatever. I mean, farting out a turd in the box office sense.
Don't you dare bring him into this. There's so many other directors you could have named.
He's a good example of someone who keeps making movies that don't make money, but he gets to keep making them anyway.
That's true.
I'm just saying. Anyway, Wonder Woman is good, so shut up.
I give Wonder Woman a 7 out of 10.
B+.
Ooh. I needed a little bit more. I needed something more out of the bad guy. I needed a little something more.
You don't have to explain your grade to me.
All right.
And then while I was gone, I didn't bother to catch the Salt Lake City screening of this movie, but you went to it here in Portland. I saw a picture of you and Dylan.
That's right. I took Dylan to his third ever movie in the movie theater,
mm-hmm.
Captain Underpants. And it's a solid flick. It is.
Did Dylan like it?
Yeah, he did like it. I was kind of surprised because he wasn't doing a ton of laughing.
Mm.
I had shown him the trailer to make sure that he wanted to sit through it.
Sure.
And I wonder if there's ever going to be a no. I can't wait for the first no.
Man, that would be something for a trailer for a children's movie not to appeal to a child would have to be a very bad trailer.
No, thanks, Dad. You go ahead.
Yeah.
Tell me how it is.
That would be very bad.
And he laughed at, in the movie, he laughed at the parts that he kind of recognized from the trailer.
Mm.
But otherwise, he was fairly quiet. And then later in the day, he described it as his favorite movie of all time.
Sure, sure.
Which now I'm understanding is not the set in stone.
You don't think he's giving careful consideration when he's making those judgments?
He might be throwing that term around a little bit. Although today it was
I wonder if it's because his dad's always asking him every day, "Hey, what's your favorite movie?"
It's rank not them. Every day.
What's
it's
your
not
favorite one?
Every day.
What is the best movie you've ever seen? Rank them right now. Do you think of a better one than this?
When we went on a walk the other day, I asked him, and he goes, "But," at the end of it. And he was like, "But it's probably going to change the next time you ask me."
That's good.
In understanding that that's typically about a month or so.
Right.
Batman Lego movie. Suddenly today, this morning, when I was taking him to preschool, he decided that was his favorite movie of all time, even though he's only seen it once in the movie theater. He put that caveat on it, which was nice.
That's adorable.
He is asking when that movie will be allowed to be in our house, so that's cute. Okay. Anyway, Captain Underpants, that's my review.
Right.
I pretty much recommend it.
It's a cartoon. It's animated.
It's a cartoon. It's clearly based on the very popular kids book, which I've never read, and I don't know exactly how that world is created. Here in this movie version, two best friends, George, voiced by Kevin Hart, and also Harold, voiced by Thomas Middletich from Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
They are best friends, and George comes up with ideas, and Harold draws. And with that, they create Captain Underpants.
Okay.
And then they're
these are like what, middle school students? Elementary school?
No. Elementary. Definitely elementary.
All right.
And then their principal is sick of their hijinks because, do they have hijinks? They're a bit of a Bart Simpson, if you will.
Oh, I see.
I think that relates to you understand what I'm – the Simpsons.
That's from my generation, yes.
Yeah. So the principal finally catches them, and their only way of hope is by using this hypnotic ring from a toy box that shockingly works, and they're both dumbfounded that it works. And they have some fun turning the principal into a chicken and whatnot. And then they finally land on, hey, this superhero we created in our comic books, let's see if he'll be Captain Underpants. And he will be, and it's a lot of fun.
Huh.
And with a snap of a fingers, he goes back to being the professor or the principal, who's mean, just mean.
Does he, as Captain Underpants, does he have any superpowers?
Nobody thinks he does.
Oh.
And that's where the fun comes into. Like the first time that he's Captain Underpants, he's like running on top of buildings, trying to deal with a blow up gorilla balloon monster thing. It's all very amusing, and there's a good base with it, with those two. Ed Helms is also a voice, and then Nick Kroll eventually comes in out of nowhere as a villain, which feels a little forced but very funny. His name is Professor Poopy Pants,
sure.
And he doesn't want anyone to laugh anymore because he's sick of being not being taken seriously because his name, of course, is Poopy Pants. And that's it. It's low stakes. I love this friendship between George and Melvin. It feels really cute. The low stakes.
Not Melvin. Harold is who I said before.
Harold. The low stakes that I'm referring to are they are the principal's big scheme is to just separate them into different classrooms. Like that's how the principal will stop this.
Right.
And they are devastated by this idea.
Sure.
Like it is, they can't wrap their heads around how anything else in their life could be possibly worse.
Right.
So yeah, it's fun. It's quick. It's easy. It's fun. It's a Ghostbusters 2 ending.
All right.
There's a giant toilet, but it doesn't feel like it's all gross out fart humor. Somehow an underpants movie has been able to rise above that. It makes me actually think maybe I will check out these books. Maybe they are some fun, for the kid.
How long is it? Would you say the movie is brief?
Okay, get them all out.
Nah, it's fine. I'm done.
I didn't leave any skid marks leaving the theater.
So I think that's a single entendre.
Okay.
When the principal is turned into Captain Underpants, is he aware that he has been changed by the magic of these boys, or does he have no idea why this is happening?
He's confused. He doesn't know like where he ended up, why he ended up, blah, blah, blah.
All right. That's fun. Yeah, I accept that. Yeah. It all sounds reasonable.
It's all good times. It's a 7 out of 10.
All right.
Oh, and by the way.
Yes.
Bring everyone you know this weekend to Captain Underpants and not that other movie that we previously talked about that we don't need to mention.
Now, I think the reason you're saying that is because you have Captain Underpants in the Summer Box Office Challenge. And
it's
Wonder Woman. I know.
It's my little baby ready to go out and see the world. And it should be treated nicely. Everybody give warm, passionate dollar bills to Captain Underpants.
Yeah, the Summer Box Office Challenge, 5 of my movies have opened now. So I'm halfway, half of my movies have opened. And then Wonder Woman will be 6th. But at this point, the midway point, my 5 movies total $280.6 million. And so I look back to see... If I double that, if I'm going to get twice that, 560, is that enough to win? And I look back, and it's about half the time 560 million is enough to win, and half the time it isn't. So,
So and no clear statistical analysis.
No
at
conclusive.
This time.
No, nothing.
Now, last week you were hopeful that Pirates would make 60 plus because it was a big one.
Right.
I told you it was tracking at 80 to 90. And that changed, and it ended up making
63. Oh, 63.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought it was 68.
And some of that tracking might have been for the 4-day weekend.
That might have been. Yes. Including Monday. I could have misread.
Yeah, 63 is not bad, but it makes me a little nervous.
It should make you a little nervous in the sense that, like, well, let's see what my number 3 movie. That was your number 3 pick. Despicable Me is my number 3 pick. So that'll be my comparison. That's what I always try to do. I always try to win as many head-to-head matchups as I can. So that way I didn't pick wrong.
Right. And I don't care about the head-to-head matchups because they don't matter. All that
and
matters
you don't,
is the total.
You also don't care about nearly anything that we're talking about except for the final outcome of this because it can't be changed at this point.
Well, that's true.
Do you feel? My hope for Captain Underpants is 20-plus million. If I can get 20, I'm okay.
I think you'd be very lucky to get 20.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably be more like 13 or 14.
So, how do you feel about Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman's going to be huge. It's getting great reviews. It's you know, long anticipated. There's been a bit of controversy about it. Not controversy, but, you know, stupid non-troversy. It's been in the news. People have been talking
right.
about it.
People are talking about it.
I feel I could easily be 100 plus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, and in other good news, I'm hearing through the grapevine, this is people on Twitter were talking, movie people, were that people in general seem to be aware of the Wonder Woman movie, but people in general do not seem to be aware of the Spider-Man movie.
Oh. Well, give them time. Give them time.
Well, yeah. They got a month still. So I'm hoping that bodes...
Man, if Wonder Woman beats Spider-Man, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see.
You know, it'd be nice. I was thinking about this. It'd be really nice if Captain Underpants could just simply make... How much did you say you have?
280 million.
So 280 plus another 100. If Captain Underpants made $380 million this weekend, I would be feeling great.
I would be feeling great at that point. I would feel great for you because that would be amazing.
It would be.
What an exciting time we would be living in.
All right, listeners, you've got a task.
By the way, I saw Baywatch.
Oh.
Well, while I was in Utah with my old friend Brett. We like to see movies together.
Even bad ones.
Sort of especially bad ones. We prefer bad horror movies, but we'll take a bad comedy when we can get it. Now, here's the thing. You hated this movie. You hated Baywatch.
Yes.
And our mutual friend Dawn Taylor, I didn't talk to her about it in detail, but she said she liked it. She said overall she enjoyed it. You guys must have been at the screening together. Did you sit near each other?
Yes, we were one person away from each other.
See, I wish that I had been there because I would have been probably sitting between you, and I would have like whose reaction would I have had? That would have been
she
very
laughed
interesting
more than
to me.
Well, I do remember her laughing.
Yeah,
more
no, she
than
said
me.
She said she liked it overall. She would have given it a positive review.
I felt like she was laughing at it.
She seemed to be laughing with it. She said she took it as a self-aware dumb movie. But the point is, no, this is not a funny movie. And here's, I was astonished how much of Baywatch doesn't even try to be funny. Like all the scenes with the villainess and her plans and everything, her scheming. Most of those scenes are played entirely straight, with maybe like one little gag tagged on at the end. All the scenes, all the action scenes, rescuing, you know, Baywatchy things. None of that is played for laughs. And so the scenes that are played for laughs, there are a few that are meant to be the big comedy showpieces, but none of them are terribly funny. And the rest of the scenes that are kind of funny aren't. It just seems such a lazy movie. Like all the hands that script passed through, and nobody thought to punch up the scenes that drive the plot.
I know. That was the thing, because it was all just inserted, like that Josh Gad guy.
And then I keep remembering, he was different because he was there for comedy.
But like it felt like it wasn't the plot that generated laughs. It was, oh, we need something funny. Let's insert another thing that he does.
And I was thinking of Spy, the Melissa McCarthy movie, and how Rose Byrne was such a funny villain in that. Like these movies, the villain can be funny too. And in fact, none of the women were funny. None of the women were even given much that was supposed to be funny. And I didn't find the Josh Gad guy as annoying as you did. And in fact, I would say I found him more amusing than anyone else in the movie. I was not as annoyed by him as you were, and I found him mildly amusing at times, but still such a waste of a movie.
And you're only going to give it a C-, right?
No, it's a D.
Ooh, all right, there you go. Solid D.
Did you notice the bad continuity and bad editing too? I assume it's from there being so many deleted scenes, like the closing credits with the outtakes. Did you notice that like none of those scenes are in the movie? But the comic relief guy, Ronnie, the first time we see him, he's got some funny chest hair, like hair around his nipples and like a down the thing. Next time we see him shirtless, he's clean shaven.
Yeah.
And there's no reference to that. Right. There was another scene where two people were talking, and in the background there were people, and the background kept changing. The two people in the background kept changing wrong with the editing. Just sloppy stuff like that. Just a sloppy mess. On DVD this week, nothing huge. I think the only one that you and I both saw is Fist Fight.
And it feels like an appropriate rental as opposed to something to see in the theater.
This
so
Charlie Day and Ice Cube. I gave it a B- at the time, and you gave it what, a six?
A six.
Six.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably for a dollar at Redbox would be a good one of those.
There's some moments
amusing enough, especially if you're a Charlie Day fan
or an Ice Cube fan.
Everyone loves a nice Ice Cube on a hot Charlie Day. Is this thing on? Also, Before I Fall, which you never did see, right?
Never.
It's the Groundhog Day if it were a teenage melodrama. And not bad, but not very good. But if you are a teenage melodrama, you probably enjoy watching it. And then Collide, which totally came and went. Hit theaters, wasn't screened, and then was gone in a week. Made no money. Just a total disaster. Not a bad movie. It's the formula where there's an ordinary guy who has to do something illegal and dangerous.
Okay.
But the task goes awry, so he spends the next 24 hours running from bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
One of those,
who's in this?
Nicholas Holt, the kid from About a Boy, but he's grown up now. Anthony Hopkins and Ben Kingsley are both in it.
That's right.
And Ben Kingsley is doing some crazy accent. It's not bad at all for that kind of simple, almost brainless guy running from drug traffickers kind of movie. So it's certainly worth a dollar at Redbox.
Even if you don't watch it, just give it a dollar. You feel bad for it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. and Anthony Hopkins is the German son of a Nazi, but has an English accent. I remember that. So those are the DVDs. We're not giving any of those away.
No, we're not. Don't worry. There'll be more giveaways in the future of things that you might actually want to see.
And the way you can get in on the giveaways, we haven't mentioned this in a few weeks, so we thought we'd mention the agents, the way the agents work here at Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. You become an agent and thus eligible to win DVDs by joining our Patreon, where you contribute a dollar a show.
$1 a show. Every time we have a show, you give us
$1. That's all we ask. Which comes to $4, maybe $5 a month.
How many would it be in a year?
52.
What about 10 years?
520.
Wow, that's a lot of money to give us. I don't know if they should do it anymore.
It's over the course of 10 years, though.
That's true. If you break it down, how much would that be per week?
It's like a dollar a week.
That's not bad.
Not bad at all. No, you barely miss it. So anyway, if we get to where we're getting $100 a show, where we have 100 agents giving us a total of $100 a show, we will start doing a second show.
That's right.
Of bonus BS.
Movie BS After Dark.
There you go. So lots of exciting things can happen.
Bonus BS. And all you do, you go to moviebs.com. Look at the top right. It says Become a Movie BS Agent. Click on Support on Patreon. That's what you do. It's done. It's that easy.
There you go. So thank you, one and all, for your support. Our agents, and we have more things coming up. We are about to record an audio commentary for the movie The Princess Bride.
The Princess Bride.
As chosen by our agents. We gave you a list of options, and that was the one that our agents voted on. So we're about to do that, and agents will get a free copy of that. Non-agents will have to pay like a couple of bucks for it, like suckers.
That's right.
Like chumps.
Chumps.
So that's the agents.
And now it's time for readers ask us a question, and then we give them an answer.
We need to work on that name.
Yeah, that was rough.
That is bulky.
This one comes from McKay. Hmm. McKay asks, why is Citizen Kane often considered the greatest movie ever made?
A fine question, McKay. And it's interesting because it wasn't for a while. Like, it's not like it came out and it immediately people said, oh, this is the best movie ever made. It took a little time. And now, of course, the problem is you go to watch Citizen Kane knowing, oh, this is the best movie ever made, and it is inevitable you'll come out of it thinking, that doesn't seem like the best movie ever made.
It does have, there are few and far between, as far as like the 40s and the 50s, movies that have a somewhat similar pace as what today's movies do. Otherwise, you know, it's just slower. That's the way it was.
Pace is different.
That's part of the issue.
The style of acting is different before the 50s, and that takes some getting used to sometimes if you don't watch a lot of old movies. The thing with Citizen Kane is you have to go into it – you can't go into it expecting the best movie ever made, which is the same as everything. We all need to remember this. Like, you can't – it's so easy to get overhyped, and it happens every time there's a popular movie or a critically acclaimed movie. Inevitably, people will see it a few weeks later and say, well, that wasn't so good because it had been built up so much in their heads that it couldn't possibly measure up.
Right. With Citizen Kane, I would say the things that are going in its favor, Orson Welles, just, you know, having name recognition with Orson Welles, director and writer and star.
It was his first movie. He was a young hotshot. He'd been a radio star, but he was still in his mid-20s, and yeah, he was a bit of a prodigy there.
That's right. And became much bigger, and then in hindsight, of course, then this becomes bigger.
He became a lot bigger. By the time he died, he was a lot bigger, yeah.
By the time he was doing the voice in Transformers the movie in 1987, mm-hmm. or 86, I can't remember. Anyway.
But the Citizen Kane, what earned it notoriety were a lot of technical things, mm-hmm. things to do with the camera, things that you maybe wouldn't notice as a viewer, but which influenced other films and filmmaking practices. So there are a lot of those kinds of things.
Like even simple things on where the camera is focusing,
mm-hmm.
and the depth that it is relaying.
Deep.
These are little things that are done in this movie that just weren't done yet and have influenced everyone since then.
Right. So there's a lot of that. I actually just rewatched this just a few months ago with my millennial friends, my 25-year-old friends.
Mm.
And They quite liked the movie. I mean, they agreed, oh, that's not the best movie they've seen, but they both really liked it, which I didn't know if they would. Because I could easily see Citizen Kane being a movie that you respect more than you enjoy.
Yes.
But they liked it, and I do. I think it's a compelling story. I like Casablanca more, if we're talking about old favorite movies. Casablanca is more entertaining, I think. But Citizen Kane is a really good story, well told, and it's so
and it has to do with the trick ending.
Well, it's not really
or a not trick the trick ending. Ending. It's not a trick ending, but like the tease
there's
of
the,
it will like
the mystery throughout of trying to find out what
it
is. Yeah.
Yes, the reveal.
Yeah,
which it hadn't been taken to that level of. It's a reveal that almost has insignificance to the characters in the film, and then a deeper significance to you and understanding the character in the film. And that's the interesting aspect of that. Those are all the basic reasons. You know, just for fun, I looked it up. Hmm. The very scientific top 25 rated films on IMDb.
Oh, yeah.
Citizen Kane is now 70.
Oh.
It's all the way down to 70.
Where's Suicide Squad on that list?
71.
Hey, so we have a fun new thing. It's a movie club.
Yeah, it's a movie of the month club.
Is that what we're calling it, the movie of the month club? Sure.
Jeff and Eric's movie of the month club.
What it is, it's Jeff and I have compiled a list of movies that we both have not seen, but that we ought to have seen, and that we're deeply ashamed at not having seen. And every month we will choose one of these, and we'll tell you at the start of the month what it is, and then over the month we'll watch it, and then you also too can watch it. And then
that's right.
First show of next month, we'll talk about the movie, and then we'll assign the new one. See?
And for June, the movie of the month is
Sex, Lies, and or Videotape. Sex, Lies, and Videotape by Steven Soderbergh.
I've heard of him.
And it is shocking and shameful that we haven't seen this. This was the movie that started Steven Soderbergh. It started Sundance Film Festival as an important place where independent films premiere. It very influential and in the whole scheme of things.
To be fair, I think I've probably seen it and erased all of it from my memory. But that's probably half this list.
Right.
It's like, to me, if I can't remember anything that's like beyond the the VHS cover, or like a clip or two, then it's like, all right,
yeah.
If I saw it, it's gone, it's lost.
So, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. If you've never seen it, watch it sometime this month, and we'll talk about it on the show at the start of July. If you have seen it, maybe you want to watch it again. I don't care what you do with your time. We're not the boss, are you?
But we're going to be talking about it the first weekend or the first show in July. So. If you want to be in on that conversation,
if you want to refresh your memory,
yeah,
and it's on Amazon and iTunes and stuff. You shouldn't have a hard time finding it if you want to. So, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, Steven Soderbergh. That's your assignment for the month of June. We ought to assign homework, write a 100-word essay. We should come up with something like we could give prizes, maybe.
Wait, just tweets.
Hey, yeah. There you go. Tweet your thoughts when you watch the movie. Tweet your thoughts about it to us at MovieBS. If you're on the Twitter.
Yeah, oh, just include at MovieBS. Yeah. We don't need a hashtag, right?
It doesn't need to be a hashtag.
I don't know.
Just tag us so we see it.
Yeah.
And we'll put a thing on Facebook, too, for discussion, if you want to.
And the winner gets something?
Maybe. I haven't worked that part out yet. Anyway, that's Jeff and Eric's Movie of the Month Club. Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Those are three of my favorite things. Actually, they're not. I don't like Videotape or Lies. Nothing? You got nothing there?
I thought you were going to ask if this thing was on again.
No.
Thought that would have been a good callback.
Would have been. And now we're at the end of the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Here's what we learned. Wonder Woman we liked.
Yep.
Good times.
And,
well done, Wonder Woman.
I got to say, I think from liking it and everything, all you bros out there, my breasts are the same size as they were going into that movie. So I don't think it'll necessarily change your core to partake.
That. I can confirm that. They are the same size and the same softness.
Yep. So soft.
And easily, this is the DC Extended Universe films, which would be Man of Steel and Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman. There's no question that this is the best one of the four.
This is the best one.
And Captain Underpants, you said, was fine.
It's good.
You gave it the same grade as Wonder Woman.
I gave it the same grade. Two great superhero movies. Two really good superhero movies this weekend.
That's it, then. So until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.
Okay. All right. Yep, right on cue.